Welcome to yet another installment in the literary genre called, but wait, if you take the word white out of that sentence and replace it with the word black, wouldn't it be racist according to you? When Richard Spencer was infamously sucker punched in the street on the way home from attending the inauguration of Donald Trump, the internet became awash with articles gleefully asking, "Is it okay to punch a Nazi?" Richard Spencer did not attend this event after tweeting messages to his followers about how he planned to go in and come back carrying 100 severed liberal heads. He wasn't even there to promote his own ideas or activity. He was just attending the inauguration of Donald Trump when someone recognized him by his distinctive haircut. Celebratory memes cropped up, replaying the event of the punch on an endless loop. Visit an archetype of degenerate millennial culture like OkCupid, and under the What Do You Do on a Friday Night section, you'll see answers suggesting that what many liberals spend their entire week looking forward to now is getting off on Friday night so they can spend hours watching those videos without distractions. So the meme asks, is it okay to punch a Nazi? Of course, Richard Spencer is not literally a Nazi. This didn't happen in Germany. Hitler is dead now, and it's been a long time since 1945. In fact, in the moments leading up to that punch, Richard Spencer was on camera for an impromptu interview, explaining both that he did not identify as a neo-Nazi and that the people who do identify as neo-Nazis hate him. So what does it mean to ask if it's okay to punch a Nazi when the term has obviously outlived its literal meaning? First and foremost, Richard Spencer is considered to be a Nazi because he subscribes to hereditarianism. Wikipedia defines hereditarianism as the doctrine or school of thought that heredity plays a significant role in determining human nature and character traits, such as intelligence and personality. Hereditarians believe in the power of genetics to explain human character traits and solve human social and political problems. Never mind that according to this definition, mainstream science is unanimous that its claims are true. This is the definition of Nazi that shortly thereafter allowed the very same people to describe a homosexual Jew who claims to exclusively date black guys as a Nazi. And it was then, just moments later, that the same group of people forced out a college speaker, Charles Murray, who is a serious academic who has devoted his career to proving that heredity plays a significant role in determining human nature and character traits, and discussing the implications of this fact. The idea is supposed to go something like this. First, the Nazis were evil. They committed horrible atrocities and left a dark stain on human history forever. Second, the Nazis were hereditarians. From these two points alone, sheer guilt by association is supposed to render all further discussion of the truth or falsity of hereditarianism impossible. By this outlook, the cancer that is the hereditarian conviction must be treated aggressively, lest the Nazi atrocities be inevitably repeated again. There are those who dispute that the atrocities the Nazis actually committed were as horrible as is often claimed. These people are usually called Holocaust deniers, but a proper reading of their works will reveal that even the most extreme among them still grant that at least a few hundred thousand, Jews and others, were treated quite brutally. So where does the argument go wrong? First of all, to argue that eugenics or hereditarianism were the source of the brutalities committed by the Nazis, ignores the fact that hereditarianism has been the norm throughout most of the entirety of human history. All the way back in 378 BC, a fictional dialogue between Socrates and Glaucon, written by Plato in the Republic, goes as follows. "I see that you have hunting dogs and quite a flock of noble fighting birds at home. Have you noticed anything about their mating and breeding?" "Like what?" "In the first place, although they're all noble, aren't there some that are the best and prove themselves to be so?" "There are." "Do you breed them all alike, or do you try to breed from the best as much as possible?" "I try to breed from the best." "And do you think that if they weren't bred in this way, your stock of birds and dogs would get much worse?"
"I do."
"What about horses and other animals? Are things any different with them?"
"It would be strange if they were."
And then throughout the conclusion of the dialogue, Socrates says, "Dear me, if this also holds true of human beings, our need for excellent rulers is indeed extreme. It follows from our previous agreements, first, that the best men must have sex with the best women as frequently as possible. Well, the opposite is true of the most inferior men and women. And second, that if our herd is to be of the highest possible quality, the former's offspring must be reared, but not the latter's. And this must all be brought about without being noticed by anyone except the rulers, so that our herd of guardians remains as free of dissension as possible. And among other prizes and rewards, the young men who are good in war or other things must be given permission to have sex with the women more often, since this will be a good pretext for having them father as many of the children as possible. To modern ears, this may sound like some kind of hardcore fascist eugenicism. In fact, this is one of the most celebrated and influential thinkers in the entire Western literary tradition, writing years before the rise of Nazi Germany. Furthermore, even eugenic policies have been in place all over the entire earth, including in the United States, for years before Nazism arose in one and only one country on earth. I've linked here to an essay titled Eugenics in the Third Reich, which explains that Hitler opposed the Jews because he held them responsible for World War II, which had nothing to do with eugenics, that the German euthanasia program was instituted for economic and practical reasons, which bore no relation to eugenics, and that the German sterilization program could in no sense be characterized as perverse, savage, or, most importantly for my argument, unusual for its time. So while Nazi Germany did have some eugenic policies, and while the Nazis were hereditarians, neither of these things can be, in any sense, what made the Nazis unique. So what about communists? If we employ the logic of those who say that the Nazis were hereditarians, so hereditarianism is Nazism, and Nazism was brutal, so so-called Nazis should be preemptively punched in the streets even before they've actually contemplated so much as forcefully touching another human being, then we would say this. The communists were blank slate environmentalists about human nature. So by the same reasoning, blank slate environmentalism is communism. And we should call anyone who leads too close to a blank slate environmentalist understanding of human nature as a communist, whether they identify as one or not. Even if, like Richard Spencer, they actively disavow that label. And communism was brutal. Until his death in 2014, Rudy Rummel was a professor emeritus of political science at the University of Hawaii. He was the author of 24 scholarly books on collective violence, war, and other deaths caused by government. These books included Understanding Conflict and War, Power Kills, Lethal Politics, Soviet Genocides and Mass Murders, 1917 to 1987. China's Bloody Century, Genocide and Mass Murder since 1900. Democide, Nazi Genocide and Mass Murder, Death by Government, and Statistics of Democide. One of these works received an award for being among the most referenced works of nonfiction in existence. Another was rated the 26th most important book of the last century. He received the Susan Strange Award of the International Studies Association in 1999 for having intellectually most challenged the field, and in 2003 he was awarded the Lifetime Achievement Award from the Conflict Processes section of the American Political Science Association. According to his scholarly estimates, the total number of people killed worldwide by governments is around 212 million. Of these, communist regimes murdered around 148 million. That's almost 70% of the entire worldwide historical total of all known deaths ever caused by government. The total number of deaths estimated to have been caused by Hitler are 20,946,000. In contrast, the total number of deaths estimated to have been caused by Mao in China alone land at 76,692,000. That's already well over three times as many. It's more than 55 million additional deaths. And that's before adding in any other communist dictatorships. Stalin alone murdered almost twice as many as Hitler, around 43 million. So clearly, if it is justified to peg hereditarianism as the root cause of Nazism and treat all hereditarians as if they would cause or deserve blame for the atrocities of Nazi Germany, then that goes several times over for blank slate environmentalists. Considering that communism involved blank slate environmentalist assumptions about human nature in exactly the same way that Nazism involved hereditarian assumptions. And collectively, it was communists, not hereditarians of any form, who are responsible for the vast majority of worldwide deaths by government atrocity in all of human history. So why doesn't society treat college kids wearing Che Guevara t-shirts the same way it would treat one who was wearing a shirt with a swastika? Why doesn't it treat college professors who downplay the atrocities committed by Marxist regimes the same way that it treats Holocaust deniers? Why is it willing to grant the assumption that even if those college kids or professors are deeply misguided, they are still at heart good, decent people who deserve lives and careers, even if they are promoting a misguided ideal? Why is everyone so aware that the mainstream estimate is that up to 6 million Jews were killed in the Holocaust, that articles about the Holocaust are among the top results when typing the generic phrase 6 million into a search bar, and no one even has any idea what the estimate for the numbers killed by any communist leader or regime even is? And now that it's a member of Antifa who was at the center of a famous punching incident, someone who showed up claiming to want to come back with 100 scalps, someone who is part of a group that sells posters advocating violence against government agencies. Why aren't we having the same conversation about punching communists that we recently had about punching Nazis? Suddenly, the mainstream media has a moral compass that says that regardless of a person's ideology, punching them when they haven't yet initiated physical violence against anyone else is unfair. And suddenly, even trying to have any of these broader discussions about history and ideology would merely be a distraction from that basic injustice. Isn't the mainstream media's ethics admirable?